people just like you have taken the brave step to do this thing we call work differently. They tell their self-unlimited story to inspire and encourage you. Another story begins now. Today, it's my great pleasure to be speaking with Michael. Welcome, Michael.
Thank you, Eden. Hi.
Now, Michael, I discovered that you were doing something around pottery, which when I discovered this online surprised me because my interaction with you previously had been around much more corporate-like work and we had a common interest in a professional field of change management that we're working in. Now, while this isn't a conversation about change management, this is a conversation of how does a guy mix these things together and make an interesting workscape for himself? And I thought, Michael, tell me, share with me.
Yeah, the funny thing is many people who really know me wouldn't really believe more in my corporate life than my artistic vibe. Like they know the artistic thing, so that didn't surprise them. So it wasn't so much of a surprise. I've always been an artistic person in different outlets, piano, drawings, painting. Web design, which was probably the closest to a commercial aspect when I was creating logos and website for people, which gave me my technical background and led me later on to projects and time management.
And that's a good point, because I think some people think, oh, that creativity thing, that arty thing I did, that was when I was a kid. And now that I'm a grown up and I've gone to work, maybe I can do something commercial like, and I'll somehow make that creative, like being a graphic designer. And that's not what you've done necessarily in the current moment. So something's evolved. What are you doing and how did you get here?
You mean in Australia or as a potter in Australia?
I'll take anything. I'm sure there's a fascinating story behind it all.
So I worked in Australia about 9-10 years ago, originally in a project in News Limited in Sydney, and where I was implementing this new cross-media system / platform for News Limited as a consultant, lived the life at the time, and decided to stick around, which forced me to leave and come back, went through various visa and challenges, even like kind of realized what was corporate life in an English-speaking country and new world types. Like, you have to understand that for me, for example, a business analyst was a new thing. I never heard that term before. Project managers, I mean, I have like a translation. We have something in French. But funny enough, when I finally became a change manager and I had to explain it to my family, hoping that it would be easier, it was easy. But there is no direct translation of change management in French.
Wow.
I don't even know how they are called right now in France, but it doesn't ring. It feels weird. So the way that my father like translated it was manipulation change person kind of thing, like manipulating people, you know, manipulating mastermind kind of thing, which in a way we sometimes do a little bit, but with good intentions.
That's going to be a fascinating conversation to pick up another day.
Yes. Yes. And so this corporate life was very new to me, but what the suit, the like IT, the system, the rules, like none of that really attracted me. What attracted me were actually people, challenges, the ability to like help people to bring value, and the money part, the money that allowed me to like do other things on the side and continue to help me to grow. And I've always been very keen on challenges, and the corporate life can bring you many challenges.
So was there a moment in this time of being on Australia, which you said was around the 9 or 10 year mark, where you thought something's not happening for me in the artistic way, I'm going to bring something to the foreground? Was there a trigger point?
I'd say that it never really left. I've always been creative, so I continued to experience in many different ways and outlets. And even like sometimes for the sole purpose of either connecting with myself or with people or to grow. I, for example, did improv. I did I even performed with like some of my mates in those like courses, and went on improv for maybe like 2 years, I think, 2 to 3 years. I did how do you call that? Nudes, basically. I've learned like how to like, and it was like a big challenge because I actually had a lot of, I don't know how to say that, but we probably like, I wasn't used to being that kind of format. So having to observe someone naked was actually harder than what I thought. And then producing it and the judgment as well, the feedback, that's not always like an easy thing to take on. And like this piece that one of the people that I made is actually in my house, and everyone thinks that my wife did it because she is the artist, the drawer, the painter, and it's actually me. So I tried like many different creative aspects. The trigger for pottery was accidental.
What was the accident?
I wouldn't say it's my wife, but...
No, not on a recording.
Well, it's recorded now. I've been married my wife for 3 years now. We met like 4 years ago. So it would have been probably, I'd say, the beginning of our marriage, so about 2 to 3 years ago. Her mother suggested a pottery class as a birthday gift because she knew that I was a bit creative. So she did that herself with her husband when she was younger, and she suggested that. So my wife offered me like a gift for both of us to do a pottery class, which at the time was just hand building, no pottery wheel, nothing. But that gave us a little bit of a taste for it. And we went then for a second pottery class. We moved to a different location. We had this pottery studio, and we thought like, let's give it a crack. And then we went for a bento class, which had like 3 sessions in a pottery studio in Crosnes, because it's always like pottery like is in 3 kind of main phases. The first one being when you hand bead or throw your clay, which is still soft. You then have to like go to the second step, which is firing it in a kiln, which makes it hard, and you can then paint it, and it goes to the next stage. Actually, there is a trimming in the between, sorry. And then the end stage is the second firing after you glazed it, which is like when your final piece comes out. I hope that makes sense. Mm. So we had those classes, and I kind of got addicted to it, like almost on the spot.
And was there a moment where you thought, I'm so addicted to this, corporate life, goodbye, pottery life, hello?
Funny enough, never. I actually never thought about it. There are some other professions. I, for example, did a little bit of theater and cinema back in France. And I was kind of dreaming of being an actor. Like I've always thought that I would have been a great comedian. For that, yet, but pottery or even drawing, many of the others, for pottery, never, no.
And is there a point where you thought, because the thing that I discovered, well, the point of discovery about you doing pottery was, here is a website with actually pottery for sale. It wasn't like you said, oh, here's some things I made at the weekend. So it moved from being a hobby to something commercial. Now, I wonder whether part of that is, well, if I'm going to spend money making things, it would be nice to get some money back so I can make more things. Or maybe it was something about sharing with people. What was going on in your mind?
Well, when I started pottery, I didn't start with the intention to sell my pottery. That was not the intention at the beginning. I started to sell pottery for a few different reasons. The first one, because it's an expensive hobby. Okay, so it was as a way to finance that, which I kind of like don't necessarily like to call a hobby, because that almost like limit or diminish the quality of my work. When you talked about Workscape, for example, it's a work as well that I take joy from. The other thing is there's something interesting. I think it goes back to commitments. Both ways, I've observed that when I was offering pieces to people, it didn't have the same effect that when I started to sell them to people. Even though, and that's maybe because people don't really realize or because I didn't articulate it well enough, but often what started my creations was the objective outcomes. I would create a piece for someone, basically. I would like really put my thoughts and intentions, try to find a piece that would cater to them, that would they would appreciate. And that gave me the drive to create pieces at the beginning. But sometimes people don't really appreciate the gift. And sometimes it's not even about you, or sometimes it's because, as you said in one of our previous conversations, they don't need it. And that's totally fair. And it's as well something artistic. So they are like, it's not anybody needs to like it. And when you offer it, you cannot force your gift on someone. So I decided that I would sell them so that the people that take them really want those pieces. That gives more value to their pieces, that gives more value to my pieces, and can even like almost like value a little bit my creations. And I might hopefully with time be able to like increase it, even if it's just like resonated with me with this idea of like value, dollars, money. And in our feeds, for example, something that did, and it might be a bit of topic here, so feel free to edit after. But I've seen how like we have this trend of, for example, coaching, or even in our career as change managers, and how like sometimes that value seems almost, and I don't want to say disproportionate because I don't want to spit in the soup, like I don't know if it's the right expression, but I see the operational people, for example, who work as general managers. My brother is a general manager, and how hard they work constantly. We have those ups and downs in projects. We have this flexibility, and even more with remote work, we have really this focus on outcomes. General management doesn't, and they're not paid as well as we do. You can argue that there are some like skills and experience that explain it, but I see sometimes like coaching sessions often going in the thousands of dollars, and I know that it means commitment, but I kind of feel that you restrict the possibilities on both ends. I can't reach out to you, you can't reach out to me. So I hope that it's weird because I don't know if I can apply it with my art, but that would mean that I probably will want to continue to increase my art and my prices, but at the same time, continue to maybe keep my feet on the ground and allow my art, my craft, to be approachable to people. So even though I might like hopefully one day create like pieces that are worth thousands of dollars, I might still continue to create a cups for the $40 a cup.
And there's so many rich ideas that I hear that are probably going backwards and forwards across your workscape in terms of, like you say, with some ideas from pottery that are going over and influencing what people might call your day job or corporate job. And ideas from the corporate job that may be influencing your thinking from the pottery. So what do you have a sense of other things that might be swirling around and cross-fertilizing in your workscape?
I did give a little bit of a thought, and I don't know what started first with chicken or the egg. Quite a few things. And I sometimes take examples from pottery to explain to people.
Literal sense, I'm imagining. So literally, yeah. Let me talk about this thing in pottery and what I did at the weekend, not just a metaphorical thing.
No, I would really like, I don't do it too often because it would force you to be too technical sometime and maybe lose your audience. And it speaks to me and it won't necessarily speak to them. So I would usually try to use images that are closer to them whenever I want to use metaphors. But with some people like my team, for example, I would use poetry. Other than that, usually I would either use, for example, I'd say project or finance examples with humility, because even though I work in a financial organization, I'm not necessarily a financial expert myself, like far away from it. So I would often use my wife actually as a metaphor. But to come back to your question about the cross-fertilization, I would say that it's a lot about learning opportunities. And I don't know if it's maybe a bit of a mix, if I learned that from my corporate career or from pottery, but and it's probably both. Every figure, it's about the way that you reframe it as well and the way that you digest the outcomes. There is emotional pain with failure. It's because there is loss, but there is always a learning opportunity from it. And that is helping, even though it's a constant like search and research, because sometimes, like, even though you learn something, you lose that learning. So you have to, like, remind yourself that learning. So there's a bit of a balance that happens in that effort. I would say that something as well that I remembered was around planning. And that's why I say balance. And I'm going to say as well flexibility. You need to, when you do poetry, for example, and the same when you work in corporate, you need to plan your outcomes, right? And the different steps to achieve it, the transition to it. But at the same time, and that may be going back to agile, for example, or in general, like human, like skills or experience, etc., you need that flexibility to adapt to changes, to as well accept when there is a fact or there is a loss, and to learn how to let go. And another thing that I think is essential to any craft, corporate or elsewhere, it's a bit of a Japanese thing probably, it's the repetition. Repetition, and not only blunt repetition, repetition with raw honesty, feedback, if possible, is what will help you to grow. In poetry, it's a bit hard to get feedback because, like anything artistic-wise, either people don't understand it, and which is fine as well. It's okay to say that you don't know, but you give me your feeling. But then there's like this ability to be confident enough to give your opinion or your feeling about it, and etc. And there's like when it comes to the honesty part, it's sometimes a bit hard in the poetry world. The best way to be honest with yourself is, and I will take a specific example, if a potter who threw on the wheel wants to know how good his skills are becoming or are, they will need to literally spend, let's say, 30 minutes an hour with all the preparation work that needs to happen for this piece to be on the wheel, which means wedging your clay, cutting it, wedging it, putting in other things, sticking it, adding water, putting it up, all that part, to finally decide to stop there, and instead of taking it to like go to the next level process, cut it, which means like losing it, like it's not going to be functional anymore. There are workarounds to it, but do you want to do? Cut it so you can see how thin and regular are your walls. And that's something that I've done it maybe once, and I haven't repeated, and that's a mistake. I know that I will have to get there at some point. I just hate the idea of losing my time, which it's funny because I know that I want there is a learning opportunity. So I hope that makes sense. I did go
yes,
on.
Yes, it does. It occurs to me in some ways it's a bit like when somebody's spent a lot of time writing words in a document and they feel the sense of having invested the time, and then they have to take words out. And I was just talking with somebody recently about how, you know, writing a 2,000 word document is actually more work than writing the 10,000 word document, because you actually have to cull and make choices. But if you've just let your thoughts go out, it's kind of like, but I don't want to lose that. I don't want to lose that. That was pretty good. And it's like, you have to be thinking, what am I trying to do here? And what actually will serve my goal? And if part of the goal, and I love that idea that you're saying there in terms of that pottery and the cutting, it's like, well, how do you understand whether what you're making is heading in the right direction? And there might be a point where you have to almost treat time of doing something as an experiment. Like, it's never going to go anywhere to the finish. So don't put that kind of expectation on myself that somehow I'm only valid or valuable if I take it to the end and produce something. It's like, no, this is never going to go past this stage, because I need to do something and then just test it out or examine it. And the only way I'm going to test or examine it is actually by what looks to other people destroying it, by cutting it open and revealing it, and at which point maybe it starts to lose its cohesion and its understanding. And I think, oh, there's something really powerful in that I'm going to take away and be thinking a lot about.
Well, you made me think about it, because what you said about the words part is, I often explain the same thing to people whenever I give feedback on communication, which I try to do with humility because I still have to learn a lot to learn about that. But usually I compare great communication to something being, basically the metaphor that I use is a racing car. At first, you have this big email with everything that you wanted to say. And the part that actually now like excites me, I don't see it as loss anymore, is seeing all those opportunities to remove those like things from this car, you know, to make it like as light as possible. So that car is as fast as possible, as impactful as possible. And that's an exercise that now I actually enjoy. So I wonder if there is not a way to reframe your brain and your heart, like in poetry, for example, to achieve the same thing. So I will have a takeaway myself too.
There is a quote, and I can't remember who it was from, but it said something like, genius is the art of subtraction and knowing what to take away and throw away. And I think unless you're prepared to take away things or throw away things, you will never emotionally be ready for that conversation. But if you're also not ready to take away and throw away things and believe that there could be an outcome that is faster, lighter, better, then you won't do that. Because I think many people, and we've probably had both this experience in IT circles, it's like, let's add this feature. And people talk about things like having all the bells and whistles and being feature rich to a point that nobody can use it. It's like, it's too much overhead. And so I think that idea of what is the more elegant, I think there's not enough of a consideration of coming up with an elegant solution or an elegant outcome, and understanding that might take a little bit more time because you have to think about what you need to take away from it to be more elegant rather than overbearing, overweight. Yeah.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. And it's when it's more natural to you because you see the value in elegance, it's easier in a way. I'm just thinking that I know that there are people that are not necessarily the same. And when I do have to articulate myself why it is important to be elegant, it takes a little bit of effort because you usually don't have to think it for yourself. You just know that it's more elegant. So, you have to accept that everyone is a little bit different and that might work for them.
And I think there's an elegance that can happen in different parts of your life. So somebody might be listening thinking, oh, so Michael, is this an elegant workscape that you've created? And it might be, well, no, it doesn't need to be. And I think some people feel that their workscape, if it was to be elegant, it's like, well, I will have done this followed by this and there'll be a nice career and it will all line up. And I actually crafted the word workscape to allow people to have a sense of there is a broad space in which I can work. And it might not look what some people might consider elegant and, you know, well organized and well thought out, because the reality is anybody who is saying that their career path, you know, was sort of well worked out, they're just looking back in hindsight and making sense of what happened. I mean, let's be honest. The reality is when I even think about my own, it's like, no, I didn't have a 5-year plan. This thing happened and then this thing happened and then something came from the left-hand side and something from the right. And for me, maybe this is partly where there's a lovely connection around pottery or even sculpting. It's like, you know, when you make something, it's like, oh, I didn't expect that to happen. Oh, well, let me just go with it. Or to your point about improv, it's like that clay just happened in my hand. Maybe the temperature was hotter today than I'd expected, but let me just go with it and see where it goes rather than thinking, no, this does not fit the plan. Oh, and then you get anxious and concerned about it. And there was a point in my life, maybe we're talking about my 20s, where it's like, I'm supposed to have a plan. And when I felt like I kind of had a plan, then it was like, I need to be meeting the plan and I need to, you know, whether it was about being accountable, well, there wasn't anybody to be accountable, but to myself, but it's like, people will be thinking, oh, she's successful if she's meeting the plan. Whereas now I've taken off that level of expectation on myself and think there is many things that could be possible in the world. And in fact, if I do have a goal or a sense of something very specific, I'm the kind of person who actually can be so focused on that. I will jolly well get there. I'll make it happen. But then what did I miss? How was my vision so focused on that thing that I didn't see the things around me or the other opportunities and the possibilities? And now I tend to walk into things more with a question than an answer. And I'm actually okay sitting with the question. I've just recently moved to a new city. And I'm waiting for my husband to arrive after selling our house in another location. And the most common question I get here is, oh, so where are you going to live? And I go, I don't know. And you see people like, oh, Oh, so what is it that you're wanting? Like, oh, I'll help you solve this problem. You just don't know what you want yet. And if you tell me what you want, I'll be able to give you advice about where I can suggest you live in the city. And I go, I don't know. Which at which point I think people think, what's going on here? How can you be living? I'm living in temporary accommodation and I'm actually okay with that. And in some ways, until my partner slash husband arrives in 2 months' time, we will together look for something. But even when he arrives, we're still planning. Let's try somewhere for 4 weeks here. Let's try 4 weeks over there and be a bit experimental about it. And this is blowing people's minds. Some people are like, wow, that's amazing. I've never thought of that. Can you do that? And it's like, well, actually you can. And I think for so many people, they have experienced a way of doing work or doing living or doing creative work that they've decided that must be the one thing. Or maybe they've had a role model in their life and they've looked and gone, oh, that person's got it right. And I think there's so many possibilities that you can craft for yourself. And what I'm loving about your story is there are many elements in there which show that you're crafting. And even the fact that you use that word craft, because I think in the work that we do corporately, I would love to see that kind of notion come from the artistic fields and say, how would you craft a change management engagement? How would you craft this document? How would you craft a communication? And whether maybe people should go on a pottery lesson before they start a communication lesson to get there in their headspace about crafting. What do you think?
I resonated with so many things that you said like all along, but to go back to the craft, the funny thing, and when it comes to pottery, there's a bit of a bit of a battle between craft and art, because there's so much of a process around it. There's so many like steps involved, so much to it that, for example, if you think creating a cup, to create a cup, you have to first like throw a pottery piece, put like the walls. It's almost like creating a brick in a way. It's a process, right? So what makes the difference between, I mean, who says that brick is art or not? What makes it like then an art creation? And craft is sometimes a little bit of a compromise, and sometimes it's a little bit of a enhancement. Because when I say craft, that means a bit of a mix between creativity and effort, experience, skills. So when it comes to change management, for example, I do believe that it's a craft as well. And I do believe that we have different ways to use that craft. We have different styles of craft. I've seen how some change managers are so good with a low level of details. They love the financial institution, so they can speak financial institution. Well, for me, for so long, I was in the corporate world without necessarily talking fully corporated world, because for example, I'm not a finance guy, but that doesn't stop you from being able to bring with your craft a value. And my craft, which I still try to define as a change manager, is usually more around adoption, engagement, and heart, I'd say. Maybe a bit, I think it's a bit of more heart, humor, and people to people, more as a human kind of language and flexibility. So I know that from now on, I would probably try to influence a bit more the people around me in the world and the implications of what a craft is. The same way that I think that project managers is a craft on its own, general, like people working in operations, there's a craft as well there. So I really like what you like, the segue that you've taken between my use of craft in pottery to the change management field.
Well, and even the fact if the kind of mindset of that you might make something in pottery and break it, or that things will break and you might see the beauty in how you might use them. And there's an element where all of that is learning your craft of doing pottery. And I think there's some wonderful ideas and abstractions that can go across to the field, which for us happens to be the profession of change management. And so for people who are listening on this podcast, they might think, but I'm not in change management. Well, that's not the point. It's that you might have another field where you can see that level of mindset and attitude that you bring to things that might come across whatever field or industry that you work in.
I agree. Like, I like what you're saying about the attitude and the flexibility of this attitude and behaviors. I really resonated with something that you repeated here again, and the almost mistake, not necessarily the failure, the mistake, which you, where you have like this ability to reframe it, or to sometimes for other people to be able to do this for you and see the potential. Mm-hmm. And actually, like in poetry, poetry offered me the first time in my entire life to be exposed in a gallery. I had like about a few months ago, I participated to a competition of poetry cups in New South Wales. I think it was open to all Australia. And two of my cups got like entries in this gallery. Wonderful. And I was like, oh my God, my work being exposed in a gallery. The funny thing is one of them got sold on the spot at the opening night, first hour. And that piece, which is a beautiful piece, was actually made from a mistake. And I saw this potential when I looked at it, and I actually pushed that mistake a bit further. So it's really funny to see how like you can sometimes see those opportunities. And if you can't, maybe don't trash it like too quickly. Someone else might be able to build on it.
Well, and I think that leads to an idea that you're probably familiar to from improvisation. There's a principle in applied improv about accept all offers. And I think when I've done any art craft type things, and maybe like if it was pottery or sculpture, it's like the temperature wasn't right. Rather than thinking, oh, that's it, I can't do it, the conditions aren't right, it's like, I got the conditions I got. What can I make of that? If I just to rather than say the conditions are wrong, I'm just kind of coping, rather say the conditions are what they are, what might that bring forth that I would not have brought forth under any other circumstances? And I think that's a wonderful attitude, particularly when we're dealing in the field of change management, where there's a lot of people things, there is high levels of unpredictability and uncertainty, completely without the background of the pandemic. Just in terms of what goes on with people. And you also mentioned before about Japanese ceramics and pottery. I lived in Japan, and I remember one time Japanese people telling me that while Japanese people are very capable of making, as a industry, very repetitive, uniform things, they do appreciate that if something didn't come out uniform, you don't throw it away. It's more highly prized than all the others, as if it's like, well, the world and the universe conspired to make it so, and isn't this wonderful? And it becomes appreciated and even exalted higher, rather than we will get rid of that and throw it off the production line.
Yeah, you're 100% right. It's a very interesting thing. It's almost a bit of I was thinking about balance, but this like almost extreme balance that Japanese people have, which express that flexibility in that way, but not in other ways, because when I think Japanese, especially ceramicist, flexibility isn't the first word that comes to my mind. I've heard stories on how like potters in Japan have to wait years before being able to go on the pottery wheel. They first have to clean the like scrubs from their master, and still now. So I feel almost like privileged. Like I know that I'm privileged. So.
Oh, fascinating. I have one last question before we come to a close. And that's the people listening thinking, wow, Michael and Helen have been having an interesting conversation here about mixing a whole lot of things together. What is it that Michael has done that I might take away as some tips or tricks for myself to have a more creative workscape?
I'd say that you're going to have reactions along the way, like good and bad, like for everything. You were mentioning the reactions to your house. We had similar reactions. I moved myself interstate as well. And we are one of those people that bought their house out of the internet without looking at it.
Wow.
Some people had reactions with people thinking, like not saying it, but it's crazy. Like you're a mad person. And some people who were envious of this adventure and like this beautiful house and like all this like new chapter. So I'd say it's a bit of a balance when you go in this journey, like for everything, between believing in yourself and listening to others. You need a bit of both. The same way that you had, I remember like someone talking to us, I don't know how to say in English, but a presentation about how many doubts and certitudes do you need? Do you need both? Do you need more of that? And he was saying that to walk, Each step, you need a bit of a balance between the two so you can progress. Mm-hmm. You need some doubt so you have like space to progress, but you need some certitude to be able to hold yourself.
Mm-hmm.
So I would say first, believe in yourself. Know that no one knows, like even yourself, like you're still learning, you're relearning things. So there is no one who can like who should put a value on you. On your creations, it's a different thing. That's their own opinion. But on you, I would say like, stop it there. And sometimes it will happen. You're going to see like, if you go into the creative, for example, aspect of a workscape, you're going to see some artists who sometimes can be a little bit weird sometimes and a bit protective as well of their like crafts, while others will be more than happy to share. So I would say, yes, believe in yourself and have this balance between feedback and seeking for feedback, but as well with caution. Hope that makes sense.
Indeed, indeed. Are you having a good life right now?
I have my ups and downs. I find, for example, in poetry that right now I need to go to the next challenge to like probably start markets, to learn how to use a square tab, to learn how to send boxes, to learn how to improve probably my branding, do a bit of more marketing, accept as well to sometimes throw away pieces and accept sometimes that it doesn't have to be perfect, but people will like it best. But we, and there's something funny, for example, on the art side is, and that's the difference between like artists, maybe in craft or this battle that I was talking about earlier. A lot of the times, my wife was telling me that I need to choose what would be my style. And one thing that I love about poetry is experimenting. And my style has been so far, not necessarily obvious because I repeat the same thing over and over, but I believe that I have a style. And this idea to box yourself again into a style, but at the same time, if you want people to be able to recognize you, you might have to find a little bit of a pattern that you can push on, and that I understand. So on that side, artistically wise, I have a few challenges. I enjoy it. Sometimes I don't. Like with every work, there are moments where like I hate poetry and it makes me cranky. And same with work. There are moments where working remotely, new challenges, it that you sometimes even like asked for can be a little bit overwhelming and isolating. So if I had like only like one source of advice more in this remote world, I know that what saved me, not for necessarily like saving like for like ever, but at least for a few hours or a day, are conversations. Whenever you like feel isolated or you feel just down or doubtful, a conversation might give you a bit of energy, B, a bit of clarity, and C, a bit of fun. And that's what I had tonight with you, Hélène. So I'm very thankful for the opportunity to have this conversation with you.
Ah, mutually a pleasure. Thank you so much.
Workscapes are changing everywhere. For more goodness to change your workscape, visit www.beselfunlimited.com.